The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Well, as you know, this week Ireland was categorised as the worst in the world for the outbreak of COVID-19. As of last night, 46 deaths were recorded and 3,086 cases. But yesterday, we did have some good news with the first delivery of the Moderna vaccine landing in Ireland. Joining me now is the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, people are craving good news. So what is the news on the vaccine? Because we know AstraZeneca have submitted to the EMA all their data, and the EMA has been analysing their data on a rolling basis. They're not starting from scratch. And we're told by the end of this month, AstraZeneca could be available to us. So fill us in on that picture.
Thanks, Pat. Yeah, there's a lot of good news, and quite frankly, we need it because the next few weeks are going to be rough. I think the case numbers are coming down, the lead indicators are all moving in the right direction. But because there's a lag between when people get infected, when they become symptomatic, when they get sick, when they're hospitalized, the situation in the hospitals, it is going to get worse before it gets better. We know it's going to get better because the case numbers are coming down. So we do need good news. And on the vaccine front, there is several pieces of good news this week. So first of all, in terms of the vaccines we already have, the target we set was to have 35,000 people vaccinated by the end of Sunday. We've hit nearly 40,000, which is very welcome. The original target for this week and next week was 40,000 a week. That's because we're getting in 40,000 vaccines. And so the strategy is to keep 1 week's supply as a buffer in case of supply chain delays, and then as the vaccines come into the country, get them out into people's arms. We've squeezed the buffer down to about 2 or 3 days because we've had very good supplies so far, and so we're speeding up. So this week and next week our plan is to target 50,000 each. Now, what does that mean? It means for anyone who's listening to us now who lives or works in a nursing home, they'll have had their first vaccination dose by Sunday week, so in about a week and a half. It means that for our frontline healthcare workers, there's about 150,000 of them. Again, by Sunday week, we plan on having 70,000 of them vaccinated. So that's some of the good news in the short term. Moderna has been approved, and yesterday the first flight had arrived. Now, they're small amounts to begin with, but they'll scale up. The first amount was brought in to Dublin Airport by Aer Lingus yesterday. On top of that, AstraZeneca, which could be a real game changer for various reasons, AstraZeneca has applied now for authorization from the EMA. Straight after this conversation, I'm going on to a video call with all of the EU's health ministers, and one of the points that I'll be making to them is there anything we can do while still following all the necessary safety protocols to help the European Medicine Agency speed that up? So what the EMA have said is they're planning on making a decision on the 29th of January. As far as I'm concerned, every day matters, every week matters. So if anything can be done safely and appropriately to speed that up, we will.
We have the option, of course, of going it alone. We don't have to stick with the European protocol. We know that Germany went off and bought extra vaccine for itself outside the European deal, where we get 1.1% of all the communally purchased vaccines. I mean, could we decide to fly solo on AstraZeneca based on what the UK is doing and so many people being vaccinated there? We'd have good intelligence on, if not the effectiveness, certainly the side effects.
Well, so the strategy and the approach is to do whatever the best thing to do is to maximize the vaccines coming into the country and then have a delivery program so that we get them straight into people's arms. We believe that the best way of doing that is with the EU. So obviously, we're a tiny country in the scheme of things. Every country in the world is screaming for these vaccinations. And because we're working with our own regulator, the EMA, who obviously we have a lot of faith in, and because we are buying as part of the biggest economic group in the world, which is the European Union, our belief is we have access to a level of vaccines far beyond what we would be able to get if we went off as a small country and tried to do it alone. And if you want, if it's of use to you, I can give you an update on the the planning and the provisional amounts that we're expecting in the coming months and the coming quarters, if that's of, if that's of use.
Of AstraZeneca or Pfizer or Moderna or all three?
Well, all three. Right. So here is the plan. We have agreed schedules for Moderna and we've agreed schedules for Pfizer because they've been authorized. And we're in conversations now with the companies simply about getting the amounts in. And Pfizer yesterday, government agreed to an additional to advance purchase an additional 2 million doses, which is very useful as well. On AstraZeneca, we're having to put in best estimates. It hasn't been authorized. We are expecting it to be authorized, but obviously we have to wait for that to happen. And only at that point can we start getting into, you know, actual delivery schedules arriving and more engagement like we have now with Pfizer. So these are
but
very
we know that AstraZeneca,
numbers.
Minister, AstraZeneca have been manufacturing in the expectation that it will be approved. And already we know it's in use in the island of Britain and in Northern Ireland. So we know that it is there to be got. So do we know how much of a stockpile they have and how quickly they can deliver massive quantities to the European countries? We get 1.1% of it because GPs and pharmacies will be able to handle this so easily. And that's the game changer, really, in terms of numbers.
That's it. So Pfizer has to be stored at minus 70 degrees, Moderna at minus 20 degrees. They can still go out to GPs, but obviously it's much more difficult for those reasons because with Pfizer, for example, the moment you take it out of the freezer, you have 120 hours to get it into people's arms. As you say, AstraZeneca is the game changer because it can just be kept at refrigerated temperatures. So the provisional agreement we have and the provisional planning we have is for quarter one. So by the end of March, about 600,000 doses. It's a two-dose regimen, so that would be about 300,000 people. When you add Pfizer and Moderna to that, our planning is that we'd have just a little less than 1.4 million doses in the country by the end of March, so that's within about 11 weeks' time, and that will vaccinate about 700,000 people. Now, what's really encouraging about that, Pat, is 700,000 people covers the first three cohorts in the prioritization. That's the entire long-term residential care sector. So that's all of the nursing homes, all 589 nursing homes, but it's also the mental health facilities and the disability facilities. It's all 150,000 frontline workers, and it's all half a million or thereabouts people over the age of 70. So any of your listeners who are sitting at home right now are wondering, if they're over the age of 70, they're wondering, when are they going to get vaccinated? That's the question on everybody's mind. What we can say now is, based on provisional amounts, these all still have to be agreed, AstraZeneca still has to be authorized, is that everyone over 70 would have a first dose and most people a second dose within the next 11 weeks. Then in quarter two, originally we were looking at about a million doses a month, so that'll be 3 million doses in quarter two. We can add to that. So yesterday, as I said, we signed off on Pfizer. That would add about 700,000 doses in quarter two. What that all boils down to, Pat, is about 1.8 million people in quarter two. Now, what that gives us is cohorts 1 to 12. On the prioritization, and I can go through them with you.
Just bring us to number 12. I mean, that's the and number 13. Who's not getting it might be the simplest thing to do at the end of quarter two, which is the end of June. Who will be left to be vaccinated?
Well, so who will be vaccinated is the three groups we said, right? Then other healthcare workers, people age over 65, key workers involved in the vaccination program, people aged 18 to 64 with certain underlying medical conditions, people aged 18 to 64 living or working in crowded setting, key workers in essential jobs who can't avoid the risk of high exposure, people in education, and then people aged 55 and upwards. So for quarter three then, which is what's left, and we would plan, it's again highly provisional, but the planning would be that by the end of quarter three, the final three groups could be done, and that's other workers in occupations important to the functioning of society, anyone else really from the ages of 18 and upwards, and then people aged under 18.
Okay. So by the end of quarter two, a lot of the people who all of the people, in fact, who would typically be in the profile of those who get very sick will be vaccinated. I mean, that's what it looks like. There are exceptions, we know, people who have no underlying conditions whatsoever, who are fit as fleas and suddenly fall a victim to COVID-19. But by and large, a huge cohort will be vaccinated who therefore cannot get infected. The jury's still out on whether or not they can pass on infection, but it's highly unlikely because if they don't have a huge amount of virus in their noses and throats, their ability to pass it on will be limited. But we'll defer to Luke O'Neill on the science of all of that. So that's pretty good news all round. By the end of June, a huge proportion of the vulnerable population will be protected.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Pat. And actually, really before the end of June, because there's people in quarter two up to and including that level 12 or cohort 12 who really aren't at risk. So by the end of quarter one, I think what's quite exciting is that by the end of quarter one, which is in just 11 weeks, the long-term residential care, remember, more than one in every two COVID death in wave one, 52% of them, came from the nursing home sector. So all of them vaccinated, all frontline healthcare workers vaccinated, and everybody over the age of 70. Now, give or take, you know, some people will be getting their second dose into April. It's not a perfect cutoff. But when you've got those three groups done, the other group that I'm very focused on is people with underlying medical conditions as well. And there are others who are at risk. But Certainly, as we move through quarter two, those who are most at risk will be vaccinated with the two doses. Yeah. And then to your point, Pat, what we're doing is we're minimizing the chances for this virus to make people really sick and ultimately to kill people.
I've been looking at the Omni calculator. I don't know whether you've come across this at all. It's a thing where you can put in your age and your circumstance in terms of health into an app, and it tells you when you're likely to be vaccinated. And this is for Ireland specifically. You can do it for other countries. I'm wondering what kind of information they push into that, whether they take account of AstraZeneca and all the rest. Probably not. But anyway, people can play around with that and maybe get the information they want. In the meantime, Minister, and this is your problem, we know that, you know, maybe inadequate communication, certainly bad behaviour, people doing what they thought they were allowed to do, but not what was safe to do before Christmas. Tony Holohan saying that the behaviour was the same as pre-pandemic in terms of socialising. And all over the world there's been reporting that it wasn't the new variant particularly. Michael Ryan confirmed this, not particularly the new variant, but our socialising, Irish socialising, gave rise to the title of the worst COVID in the world at the moment. You must have, you know, regrets about the way the messaging was done and indeed about the decisions that were made to open up retail, to open up gastropubs and restaurants, because it was a disaster.
So there were various things at play. Social contacts, as you say, was one of them. And government is responsible for the decisions it makes and is responsible for decisions around the measures. Absolutely. And in the fullness of time, I've no doubt there will be a thorough look back. The UK variant, we can come back to. It is a very major part. I know what Dr. Ryan said, and we can come back to it if you like. But the UK variant right now is responsible for the very, very high numbers. They simply wouldn't have happened without this UK variant. We had very high cases in the UK, coupled with obviously a lot of east-west travel over Christmas. Seasonality played a factor as well. So all of those things were at play. Ultimately, the disease spreads through, you know, person-to-person contact. That is the case. And the mobility data shows that the amount of moving about in December was at levels that were seen before COVID, unfortunately. But what I'd say is this, Pat, is let's just go back to November. We were in level five, and as a country, we moved before the rest of Europe. We moved in a very decisive way, and we got down to the lowest cases anywhere in Europe. And really the plan which people were bought into was the Irish nation, the Irish people, were going to take the hard medicine first We're going to take it from mid-October to the end of November.
We can go over that and say how brilliant... Minister, in fairness, we could say how brilliant we were in the second wave and we didn't have one. The point is, we have the worst third wave around and we made mistakes. And I wish some of the politicians would actually come out and say, yeah, we made a mistake. You rarely hear it from politicians, but it's palpable and people know you all made mistakes. And just say, yes, we made a mistake. It was the wrong call. Why not just simply say that?
So I think what would be fair to say is if we knew then what we know now, government would have made different decisions. People would have behaved differently. The advice from NPHET would have been very different. But what you've got to judge public health advice, people's behaviour, government decisions, all of this has to be based on what people knew at the time. And the point I'm trying to make is there was an understanding that we were going to open up in December. Now, by the way, not fully. So there were still restrictions on household visits right up to the 18th of December, and restrictions were brought back in on Christmas Eve. So the actual window where restrictions were relaxed was, what's that, about 8 days in December? But if the UK, if the variant hadn't arrived, what would have happened, which people were broadly bought into, was there was going to be a lot of social contact. The cases were going to rise. You and I talked about 2 months ago. You and I were talking about the fact we knew that there was likely to be a spike in early January.
But not this.
And
not
what
this.
Would have happened, I mean, but remember, Pat, no, not like this. But remember, and I'll finish on this, right? Remember, without the UK variant, what would have happened, which people were largely bought into, was we would have gone back to level 4 or 5. And the cases would have gone down very quickly, just like they did in October.
Minister,
and none of the stuff we're dealing with right now would have happened.
Nonsense. We did none of the things that we are now doing. We were insisting on a PCR test within 72 hours of arriving here. You turned your face against that for months and months and months when other countries were demonstrating its effectiveness. We still have the back door from Northern Ireland. I think the Taoiseach was addressing that particular point, that it's a weakness in our whole system. People can fly into Belfast and motor down here without any PCR test. I mean, there is a level of wishful thinking, magical thinking going on that it should be much more following the science and be much more rigorous.
Certainly on travel, what we did was we did what the rest of the EU did, right? So we were fully in line with the Commission. As soon as we found out about this variant, I'll give you the exact timeline. So on the Thursday before Christmas, NPHET's advice was moved to level 3 on Stephen's Day. On the Friday, the UK government said, we have a problem here. We all worked through the weekend, obviously. We were back and forth with people in the UK on what was going on. And by Monday, we were putting a travel ban in place. Now, you're absolutely right. The situation with Northern Ireland is difficult. And the point I'm about to make is not a political point, as in having a dig. There's a real opportunity for Sinn Féin to help here. They are dealing with resistance from some elements of the unionist community. That's absolutely true. But what I would like to see, and I think what Sinn Féin really could help with, is putting in place the same restrictions between Northern Ireland and England as, for example, the Scottish have put in and that we've put in. I think that would help the situation.
Yeah. In the meantime, Minister, you have a crisis on your hands. And we know that thousands of healthcare workers cannot go to work. But then they've been told, and they've been called back to work. The HSE Chief Operations Officer, Anne O'Connor, is saying that people who've been close contacts and therefore has to isolate at home, they're being called back into work. And they will be monitored while at work if they're asymptomatic. In other words, people who are asymptomatic and could be riddled with COVID-19 are being called back into the health service and they'll be monitored. Now, what does that monitoring mean? Does it mean an antigen test before they go to the ward?
Yeah, so they'd be tested before they come back in. So this really is to make sure there's
enough. How often will they be tested?
You'll have to ask Anne O'Connor about that. That's an operational decision.
I mean, will it be every day? Because that's what you have to do with the antigen test. You have to do it every day. Because at a certain point, if you've been infected, you become infectious. And that's really the value of the antigen test. We've been talking about antigen tests for months. There was supposed to be an experiment going on, at some sort of a pilot program. Never heard anything more about it.
Yeah,
I think
so
Beaumont was going to be
pilots.
Yeah, and what's the conclusion?
They have. So it's been used. The antigen tests were deployed in Letterkenny, and then they were deployed in other outbreak settings, and it's now standard operating procedure for when there's an outbreak in one of the healthcare settings for both sets of testing to be done in parallel, the PCR testing because it's more accurate and the antigen testing because it's quicker. My understanding is where there's a derogation on close contacts that it would be a PCR test rather than an antigen test because obviously the PCR test is more accurate. A lot of work was done between now and wave one. So ventilators, PPE, oxygen, ICU training, beds, critical care beds are in a better spot. But the pinch point is staff. And the pinch point particularly is critical care staff. So in those situations where there is testing, then close contacts, there is a derogation for the HSE to bring them back in.
With Anne O'Connor as to whether or not anyone before they're allowed on the ward has to be antigen tested every day, not just once a fortnight. Or, you know, the other thing that we've discovered, that you cannot force nursing home staffs to be tested. Now, I see in the newspapers, I think Simon Carswell has a report, that the COVID-19 outbreak has claimed 15 lives at a South Dublin nursing home called Simpsons in Dundrum. That's about a third of the people in that facility. Now, I thought we'd learn from our mistakes in the first wave that you protect the people in the nursing homes because they're old, number one, and they're generally, they have underlying conditions. That's why they're in nursing homes. I mean, this is unconscionable.
So you're absolutely correct in terms of that is what has to be done, and that has been the strategy. So there's been huge work done, first and foremost by the nursing homes themselves, and Nursing Home Ireland have played a leading role in that. Also by the HSE and by HICWA in doing a lot of things. So the measures were stepped up, serial testing was introduced. Serial testing is now moving from 2 weeks to weekly. We've cancelled visits except for very exceptional circumstances, like end of life visits have been cancelled. And obviously, and most importantly, we have prioritised testing. So in about 11 days'
one
time...
More than one-sixth of nursing homes have vaccinations. Yeah, but you can't even force staff to be vaccinated, believe it or not. But that's unbelievable on one level, that you'd want to work in a place when the offer of vaccination is there and you might turn it down. But the inability of employers to say, you're not coming in here unless you're clear, unless you're tested. I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah, it doesn't sit easy with me at all. Really.
But you're the minister. You could change these things.
You can't force people. That is a question for the employer. But it doesn't sit well with me. I mean, in my view, anyone who works in a nursing home, everyone who works in a nursing home should be getting tested. And it does not sit well with me at all that there is a small number of people who refuse to get tested. I don't believe that should be the case. But critically, what we can control is vaccinations. And so by Sunday week, they're the top priority. We've squeezed 3 weeks of work into 2 weeks by bringing the buffer down to about 2 or 3 days. Critically, by Sunday week, we will have covered the entire nursing home sector, 589 nursing homes with the first dose, and then we'll be cycling back immediately for the second dose,
sure,
which you get 22
days. And that is great news. But suppose a worker in that nursing home, any of them, says no, not taking the vaccine. What then?
Well, to me, the priority is not so much vaccinating the workers, it's vaccinating the residents, right? The advantage of vaccinating the workers is the theory is the transmission reduces. As you rightly said, the jury is out on exactly what it does to transmissibility. But the science, the medical science, suggests that as you lower the viral loads, that the transmissibility goes down. Now, there isn't data as to what that will do. So the advantage of vaccinating the workers, there's two things. First of all, it should, the medical science would say, reduce the risk of it coming in. The second thing is, it means the workers don't get sick themselves. And remember, there's now about 900 nursing home workers who are out sick or linked to COVID. Yeah. They could be close contacts. But for me, but much more important than any of that is that we vaccinate the residents.
Okay. Many questions from people wanting to know, how will we be notified that we're getting the vaccine? You know, what's the mechanism? Because GPs have found a technical problem with their access to vaccine use. The software doesn't seem to be working for GPs, or it wasn't on Monday. Whether it is now, I don't know. But for ordinary people, how will they know that they're in line to get the vaccine?
So there's going to be a portal set up where everybody will be can be recorded, and when they got it and their details and so forth. My sense is the vast majority of the general population will be vaccinated in a few different places. They'll be vaccinated by GPs. We have about 3,800 GPs, and they have practice nurses. There's about 3,800 pharmacists. And what's really important about that, obviously, is they're in every town right across the country. And the hope and what we're planning on is large amounts of AstraZeneca in particular. And by the way, there's others coming. So we haven't talked about Johnson & Johnson, also at refrigeration temperature, and it's only one shot as opposed to two shots.
Yeah.
So there, and we've advanced purchase a lot of that as well. So
okay.
There'll be
well, one
GPs,
question which I have
pharmacists,
to,
and there'll be vaccination centres.
Yeah, we're going to have to conclude shortly, but Jerry in Dublin says, we have some of the best medical technology companies in the world in Ireland. At least one company in Dublin has offered to produce over 100,000 vaccines a day. The government has refused them. Why, says Jerry, asks Jerry.
Well, production of vaccines is not a matter for government for any government in the world. It's a matter for the pharmaceutical companies themselves. So the pharmaceutical companies, my understanding is at least some of them, are in contracts with various manufacturing groups across the world to do that. So, you know, really that's a question for the pharmaceutical companies themselves.
All right. The GPs, will they be allowed to use their discretion, or will they be tied to lists?
Well, both, right? So there'll be protocols in place, but exactly as we had for the flu vaccination. Remember, the GPs and the pharmacists rolled out over 1.5 million flu vaccinations very, very successfully just in the last few months. And so what happens is they get lists, they get prioritization lists, just like they did with the flu vaccine. And then obviously GPs know their patients. They know who's vulnerable. Okay. They know who's likely to turn up. They know, who, you know, they know all of these things. So I've no doubt there will be good clinical judgment used, no question about it. But there will we will be following the prioritisation list as advised by NIAC.
All right. We will leave it there. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, thank you very much for your time this morning.